This podcast is called Obsessed. Joseph Scrimshaw and his guest get some secrets off their chest. You should listen. It's the best.
Good evening and welcome to Obsessed with Joseph Scrimshaw. Thank you all very much for coming. This is a live show and it's also a podcast, which is sometimes kind of odd for me because, of course, I physically see you people right here that are live. And I can look at you and talk to you just like that, like the woman who just looked shocked and alarmed. But when I'm talking to the internet, it's hard to know where to talk. So I have a couple of things to say. So do you mind being the internet? And if at any point I have something to say to the internet, I can look at you?
That's fine.
Okay. So I wanted to tell you live people here that I have a book called Comedy of Doom. It's a collection of short stories and essays and funny things about geek stuff, and that's on sale in the back of the room. But if you are the internet, it is on sale on Amazon.com, so please check that out and enjoy that. And to begin our podcast tonight, I would like to talk to a random audience volunteer. And the random audience volunteer I will speak to this evening is named Noah Kessiker. Noah, are you here? Noah, please join me on the stage. Right now. Did you think you would have time to process? Just go ahead and have a seat right there, Noah.
It's Noah
Kessiker. Okay, and go ahead and take this off of the stand and speak into it with your mouth. There you go.
This is my mouth.
Wonderful. So now, Noah, did you put your name in the little basket of fate?
I did, yeah.
Okay.
For Robin's birthday. It's Robin's birthday.
All right, let's give Robin a round of applause.
Is it bad form to tell everybody how old she is? She's 30. Sorry.
She's going to die soon.
We're all going to die eventually.
Eventually, yes. We all get closer every second, so let's move on. So you only did this to please Robin?
Pretty much.
Okay, so just to be clear, you don't want to be speaking with me right now.
I don't really like the radio.
Okay, well, this isn't on the radio. This is on iTunes and whatnot and on the internet. Okay. If you keep the microphone to your mouth, I'll hear everything that you say.
All right.
You're holding it in a sort of like rap style, where you're going to say what you want to say, and then you're going to throw that shit down. This is a perfect segue to talk about what you're obsessed with.
Where is my drink?
Which is bathroom door etiquette.
Bathroom door etiquette.
That's a topic of a lot of rap songs, isn't it?
Yeah.
Bathroom door etiquette. Bitch, please. So when did bathroom door etiquette first come into your life, Noah?
I have no idea. I mean, do you remember when you first became conscious?
No, but I do remember bathroom doors.
Yeah, I guess since I first figured out how to use my opposable thumb.
Okay. But was there a traumatic incident? Like, I remember, like, my grandmother walking in on me, and then she was like, hey, here's how the lock works.
Yeah.
So.
No, that's terrifying.
Yeah, I was 16.
I'm
it was
sorry.
Really.
No. Do you want to talk about that?
No, sure. Yeah, we're talking about it right now.
Sure.
So was there any traumatic event for you that spurred your interest in bathroom door etiquette?
No, I mean, I like science. I like science, and so I think a lot about minutia and, like, all the little molecular workings of things.
Okay.
And then I also observe, I like people mostly, except when I don't like all people. Actually, I don't like people that much. that's what I was looking for. I like her. Yay.
Noah has been delivered a beer, Internet.
Yeah, thank you. thank you, Internet. So what was the question?
Let's back up a little bit. We'll get to the bathroom door etiquette. What do you do for a living?
I'm a couple of things. I'm a composer,
okay.
A multimedia artist, and I'm a arts administrator. I work at Springboard for the Arts in St. Paul.
Wonderful. Awesome.
Yeah. You might know some people there.
I know many people who work at those at Springboard for the Arts.
Related.
Lovely organization that helps nonprofits
Thank
and whatnot.
You.
So
plug that.
You're a multimedia artist. Have you done any
composer.
A composer and multimedia artist,
yes.
Right? So, have you done anything with bathroom door etiquette in your work?
No. Do you want to write a grant with me?
No.
We could make this happen.
I don't want a grant. I just want you to do it. I want you to go out there and make it, like,
maybe,
guerrilla style.
Okay, sure. Yeah,
like,
maybe I'll think
after the
it.
Podcast, you could do, like, you know, a piece with the bathroom at the back of the theater.
I could do that, yes.
Yeah, just site really site-specific. Yeah,
I could put, like, cameras on it, and then and I could mic it. So every time, like, okay, are we going to get to the etiquette part?
Yeah.
Oh, all right. I'll just whose show is this anyway? So one of the things, like, for instance, I could mic the sound of, like, the when you wash your hands,
right,
and
the
you
sink.
Don't fully dry them, and then when you grab the handle and it's like moist and you leave like that body, it's like
so you believe that you have mic sensitive enough to pick up the sound of moisture on a doorknob.
Yeah, of course, like I could do it and be like
for the internet, he just put the mic to his throat as though he was a stoma victim and I could somehow hear him.
Yeah, so, yeah, they have technology and stuff.
Okay, so why did you write this down in a slip of paper? Why did you write down bathroom door etiquette? Was it a joke or are you truly obsessed with it? Do you spend a lot of time thinking about it?
I do. Every time I go into the bathroom, I get really like uptight about bathroom door etiquette. And I have the obsessed part about it is what I have a system for how I open the door. First of all, from a like a hygiene standpoint, in my opinion, a bathroom door should never open in.
Right.
Should always open out. Because all the people that don't wash their hands or like are nasty and like doing terrible things, like you should be able to like turn and like lean with your shoulder and push the thing open without ever touching anything that you're gonna like eat with.
Right.
Like that.
Yeah.
That's one thing.
For the people of the internet,
yeah.
He wiped his beer glass and made a slurping noise.
Yeah, I'm bad.
Just like the bathroom. So
that's one thing, like, that I just see a lot of people that don't wash their hands in the bathroom. I've seen people, like, at a urinal, I won't name the establishment, like, texting while they are urinating.
Right.
You know, and they're that's one hand here texting with the other.
That's
then
just,
they switch it up.
That's standard these days. Like, that's just standard. Soon you're going to have a little cozy on the top of the urinal for your smartphone or iPad. That's
right.
So standard.
But then consider that, like, after they do that, they don't wash their hands. They open the door. They go out to the restaurant and they be like, hey, check out this video game. Do you want to play it? And then you're like,
yeah,
I agree
with your point that as humans we touch a lot of things with our hands, including our penises.
Yes, and that fecal coliform matter.
There needs to be an etiquette.
For so although urine is sterile, like I still don't want yours in my mouth.
Well, of course not. Anywhere else is fine, I'm sure, but not in the mouth. Yes. So, it sounds to me like you have a very understandable concern about bathroom germs being transferred to other things like smartphones and urine not ending up in a toilet but in your mouth, all natural concerns. So, but why is it fixated around the bathroom door in particular?
Well, because I have, through my obsession, come up with a system for how I will open a bathroom door.
Okay, so what's your system?
And it is that I basically take your hand, and you have the primary digits, which are your thumb and your forefinger,
right.
The two strongest ones, which is what we normally most used phalanges, if you will.
Some of us are pinky door openers, yes. But.
Right. And then you look at the door, and usually in a lot of industrial bathroom, the door handle is not a knob. It tends to be a bar.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a knob, you're screwed. Like,
right, okay.
It's like, but paper towels. So this is also complicated when there is only the hot air dryers.
Right.
Because although they may be efficient for the environment, they don't encourage people to dry their hands.
This is a really long backstory to your system. It's like,
I know,
I'm asking to hear The Lord of the Rings and you keep telling me The Hobbit.
Sorry.
What is your system? I understand how bathrooms work.
The system is that because most door handles are located lower to your hip for the average height. If you can look at the wear patterns on them, they're always shinier, more worn at the top. So therefore, that's where more people touch the handle.
Right.
And more people are touching it with their primary digits, their thumb and their forefinger, because we use those like
of course,
sandwiches.
Yes.
So therefore, I'm obsessed with basically opening doors at the bottom of the handle where it's least touched with the finger that I use the least amount of.
So you look for the least busy part of the handle and open it with your pinky.
Probability-wise, I'm minimizing the ability for high concentrations of molecules of other people's lack of hygiene reaching an appendage of mine that has a high contact rate with my mouth.
Okay.
I think the bottom of the handle.
You have proven incredibly quickly that you are indeed obsessed with this topic.
I entirely believe you.
So I always like to close little interviews with some pompous little questions. So are you ready for your artsy little questions? Of course you are.
Thank you.
You're a multimedia artist. You can handle this. So what is your favorite swear word to say when you stub your toe?
Can I say this?
Oh, yeah.
Is there children?
No, there are no children at 10 o'clock in a bowling alley.
Jesus fuck.
Jesus fuck. You
right,
say a complete sentence. That's nice. So the second question is, if you had to have your arm replaced with something, this is very relevant to you because you're very obsessed with what you do with your arm.
Yeah.
If you had to have your arm replaced with something, would you prefer it to be a toilet plunger or a feather duster?
Toilet plunger.
Toilet plunger. Not what I was expecting, but fair enough. And finally, Noah, what is happiness?
It is happiness, obviously.
Ladies and gentlemen, Noah! Thank you very much, Noah.
Thanks.
Thank you. Happy
you were
birthday.
Fun. You were a very, very fun audience volunteer. Wash your hands. Everybody, wash your hands. That's the message of the podcast tonight. So when anybody decides to go into the back room and use the bathroom, really just give a lot of thought to what Noah might want you to do. Look at the wear patterns like you're on CSI. Now I'd like to welcome our guests for the evening. The first guest is a DJ from The Current and an awesome lady. Please welcome Barb Abney. Hello, Barb. And our second guest is a writer and performer from Mystery Science Theater 3000 and currently from Cinematic Titanic. Please welcome Trace Beaulieu. Hello, Trace.
He touched that.
There's Foley moisture on this microphone.
Is there a little bit of moisture?
Thank you, Noah.
Yeah, it's a gift.
Yeah.
I wanted to leave it for you. Now you are one. So, Barb, see, I just paused for half a second because I knew someone would be creeped out by that. And sure enough, there was a little creeped noise. So, Barb, I would like to first talk to you a little bit about your obsession. And your obsession is with the Afghan wigs, correct? Okay.
Where do you want me to begin? When I was introduced to them? Or?
Well, let's, for people who don't know you and maybe don't live in the Twin Cities, let's start with a little bit of who you are. You're
a
DJ on The Current, right?
I'm a DJ on The Current. I work 10 to 2, Monday through Friday. Thank you. If you don't listen to The Current, but you listen to Minnesota Public Radio News, I do the programming supported by voice.
Wow.
That's my grown-up voice.
I think I just got a bunch of donations from you saying that.
Yeah, yeah. And I've been here, it'll be 6 months next week.
Wow.
Or 6 years next week, jeez.
I was going to say.
A little longer than McDonough's sitting there going and looking at me going, no, I know better. No, it'll be 6 years next week that I've lived here. And I love it. I've been in radio for 17 years, and I like music a lot.
Yeah, and know a lot about it, right?
In theory.
Yeah, because who did you just interview? You just had,
Billy Corgan.
Yeah, wow.
Billy Corgan.
Did you interview him on the phone or in person?
On the phone, which is even scarier because you don't have any rapport.
Right.
You know, you don't have any body language to go by, and you're like, you don't know if somebody's fucking with you or not, and you're like, is he really being nice or is he being facetious? But he was really nice.
Okay.
That's something I do often, but it still scares the bejesus out of me daily.
Right, because it's hard, because you have to ask them some of the same questions, right? Because it's just what people are interested in.
The same questions that they're asked, every single DJ asks them, and then you're like, I really want to ask that one question that nobody asks, and then you ask it, and they're like, why would you ask me that? It's like, oh, I don't know.
I'm just trying.
I thought it would be good.
How do you feel about bathroom etiquette, Billy Corgan?
I'm putting that one on.
You can try that now.
I'm going to try
that. You
can
try that anytime. Yes. Thank you, Noah. So now, when did Afghan Wigs first come into your life? You lived in the same town as them, right?
Yes, sort of. I lived outside of Cincinnati in a little teeny tiny town, 35 miles away from Cincinnati. And I had a friend who was cool and who moved to the big city of Cincinnati. And he would introduce me to music. Like, I had a big Prince thing when I was a teenager, and I suddenly drifted off into the land of Poison and Queensryche and such. And he came to me and said, "Barb, try Smashing Pumpkins." And I'm like, "Okay, you try Typo Negative." And he's like, "Try Nine Inch Nails." I'm like, "Okay, I can get behind this." And then he gave me an Afghan Wigs album. And he's like, "I want you to go see the show with me." And we went to the show at Hare Arena because the Breeders were there with them and Guided by Voices. Yay! It was a Hare Arena show in March of 1994. And I had the Afghan Wigs record for about a week before it went. And I knew maybe two lines of two songs by the time we got there. But my friend, who of course had the entire record memorized, looked at me shocked when I started singing along. And he's like, "How do you know this?" I'm like, "This is Prince." So they'd weaved Prince into a song and then weaved out. And I became pretty obsessed with them. And about 3 or 4 months later, I started my career in radio. And the day that I walked out of after doing my interview and got in the car and turned on the radio station, an Afghan Wig song was playing. It was kind of kismet for me.
So when you say you became obsessed with them, like you really like music a lot, right?
I do. Yes.
So how could you tell that I'm more into them than Nine Inch Nails? How did that express itself?
Because I've seen every single show that the Afghan Wigs or Greg Dooley in particular sang within 3 area codes of anywhere that I've lived since 1994.
So you've stalked him.
I know way more than I need to.
You've legally stalked him. That's basically what concert
totally
is, right?
Yes, I've legally stalked him.
It's a legal stalk.
Totally legally stalked him.
In fact, that would be a great name for a concert. Legal stalk.
That should be our side project.
We'll set up legal stalk.
But I am really psycho. I have all the records except for the first vinyl because I refused to buy it, like black market.
You want to get it from them?
Yes, absolutely. And I know.
You really think that there's a rock band in the world who'd be upset that you go and find one of the records in like a used record store?
No, I wouldn't do that. I want to buy it new. I want one. I know. I want to buy it new. I kind of am crazy like that. But I once attended a seminar where Greg Dooley, the lead vocalist, mm-hmm. was talking about copyright and stuff. Now, 6 or 7 years ago, it was a lot different than it was now.
Right.
And he compared, you know, somebody taking his song from the internet as somebody taking an apple from an orchard. And so I refuse to, like, you know.
So he, like, really hates children's field trips in the orchard.
Perhaps. So maybe that's why he doesn't have any.
Okay, but when you were younger, in the 90s, and you first encountered this music, and, you know, you were so versed in all different kinds of music at the mm-hmm. time, what was it about the Afghan Wigs that hooked you and made you want to legal stalk them?
Because they could literally like rock, just totally rock. But they could rock.
God, no,
they could rock.
That's what I'm laughing at. It's like beautiful in its simplicity. Of like, why do you like a rock band? They rock.
Okay. And the lyrics, just absolute filth. Like I'd never heard. And I love Prince. Okay. This just complete filth. And I had never wondered how to explain a guitar lick is filthy and dirty. But there's just a sound, which I've learned from my musician friends, is accomplished with a pedal that I didn't know beforehand. I just thought it was some kind of
pedal.
Fucking magic. It's like... It's amazing to me. It's like, it's sex music, okay?
Okay.
And Greg Dooley's voice is aural sex. Can anyone agree with me? Anyone? A-U-R... Well, trust me.
So you're saying that it is more sexy than Axl Rose?
Oh, hell yeah. Now, and I think that Greg Dooley could take Axl Rose, too.
Like in a fight?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I think I love Axl.
I know you do.
But I think anyone could take him in a
fight.
He likes
Chinese
right
democracy.
I do.
He does.
I like Chinese democracy.
I'm sorry.
I heard somebody
I'm not outing you. Other people know this, right?
I know. Most people are like, what's Chinese? Everybody would be for that politically, right? Like, they don't even know what they're...
but I will say, when I first met my sweetheart, there was this, it's called the Josh's Blair Witch Mix. And what it was, it was when the Blair Witch Project came out in 99, they released it. It was supposed to... Do you remember when it was first released? It was supposed to look real, and they were messing with your mind. Oh,
the movie? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so they released this as, this is what was in Josh's car when they found it. This CD of mixed songs and stuff. And there was a Wiggs song on there.
Oh, okay.
And I just had got the CD when I first met Chris, and I put it in, was listening to it. I'm like, do you know who this is? And he's like, this is the Afghan Wigs, isn't it? And I'm like, oh, he's so in. He knows who this is. He's in.
So what you're telling me is if he had said, I don't know who those people are, you would not be in a relationship with him.
I probably would have given him an opportunity to go and see a show with me and then make that choice.
But it was just, been it was magic. That
beyond
he,
then, it would have been done.
He knew it.
Yeah, he knows that.
Now that was oral sex, to hear out of the dark a man say,
oh, yeah.
That is oral sex. Man, I might need to go to the bathroom.
Wash your hands.
I will wash my hands many, many times.
Ooh, Greg Dooley made me say fuck on the air once. But it was an internet radio station.
Okay. Yeah.
And there was a song that had fuck in it, and I was interviewing him, and I'm like, you want to talk about the song? And he's like, yeah, it's called Fuck It, Ma'am. Why don't you want to talk about it? And I'm like, because I've never said that on the air. So he made me. Making him awesome.
Did you enjoy it?
Of course I did.
Okay, so you've interviewed them. How many times have you interviewed them?
I've interviewed Greg. Actually, I've only interviewed Greg a couple of times. But I've never interviewed the Afghan Whigs. I've interviewed Greg.
Okay.
And I've interviewed the Twilight Singers, but I've never interviewed the Afghan Whigs.
So is that like a goal? Because they just got back together, right?
Right, they just got back together, but I don't know how that's going to work out here because they have two dates in Chicago and then us, so I probably won't get to do it this time either.
But you have a lot of pull, right? You can just say you're going to do an interview at the Current, right?
You see, he's kind of a... are you familiar with Taurus? Taurian, like... Mm-hmm. Oh, no, I'm going to do whatever I want. I mean, well, most men are that way anyway, whether you're Taurians or not. But he's kind of a headstrong person. And
okay.
I mean, he's at the point in his career that he doesn't have to do anything.
But
he doesn't
I perceive you as a person who has a strong personality. Oh, you have a relationship with them, and you work at a major station that plays their music and supports them.
This is true.
So
he knows it's out there. So
the offer has been made.
Yes. I mean, it's not like they're going to get paid or anything. It's just that they're going to make my, teeny tiny little heart beat a little faster.
You need to make him an offer he can't refuse in some way.
How?
Well, like, you work for so Minnesota happy. Public Radio. You put Garrison Keillor's head in his bed.
I don't have that kind of pull, Joseph.
Well, I mean, well, it's an axe. It's an axe.
An axe.
An axe and a good attitude. We'll get that done.
I don't know where Garrison Keillor lives. Do you?
Yeah.
Okay, there we go. That's funny, isn't it?
Anyway, I don't think Garrison Keillor will ever listen to my podcast, though.
So. He probably will now.
I'm not going to worry about it too much.
You've invoked him. There are people out there that are going, oh, Keillor.
I've only said his name twice, so as long as I don't say his full name three times.
He won't Beetlejuice you.
He won't appear dressed as Guy Noir. Okay, so I think you've been quite clear with your obsession, and it's on a nice track of it entered your life at the right time, and helped you connect with your man, and it's followed through on your career. It's an awesome obsession. So, is there anything else that you feel the world needs to know about the Afghan Whigs before we go into the final questions of your section of the podcast?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, if you suddenly think of something while I'm talking to Trace, you can just scream it out.
You said that. He did say that. You heard him.
They were in Sweden in 97. Just
it was
out of
the
blue.
Gato Negro tour.
If people need to know. So, all right, here are your final pompous questions. If you had a rock and roll stage name, Barb, what would it be?
See, it would be Abney Barber. But my band would be called Tease, T-E-E-Z-E. I figured this shit out when I was 14.
Excellent. And which is more likely to get a person laid, playing air guitar or air drums?
Oh. That's really rough, because usually, I mean...
No, and it's air.
It's anti-get laid to play an air instrument.
I know, so you're already fighting against the stream.
Well, okay, air guitar, because maybe you can hide it behind you. You can hide a little more if you're playing air guitar, whereas if you're playing air drums and you're hitting the hi-hat, people are going to see that, and that's... And what if you're offbeat when you're doing it?
When you're playing the air drums?
Yes, you're totally not getting laid. If
you're assuming that somebody's playing along to music. Someone's just doing a mime routine.
This is true. Okay. Yes.
So you think the more likely person would be someone who is hunched over trying to hide the fact that he's playing air guitar.
Guitar, yes, yes, because I saw someone play air guitar on this stage one day that blew my mind.
Oh, yeah, well, that was a professional air guitarist. But
I bet she gets laid.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, but we don't have time for that, so let's move on. Your final question is the same one that everyone has. What is happiness, Barb?
The Afghan Whigs reuniting.
Ladies and gentlemen, Barb Abney!
Do I leave?
So now, Trace, we are going to move on to you. And for anybody who doesn't know you, can you tell us just a little bit about your career?
Well, I'm here, which says a lot about my career. Yes, I'm
it's
at the end
true.
Of it. No, I kid because I'm not getting paid. Well, you mentioned Mystery Science Theater. That's probably what I'm best known for. I was a robot on that and a mad scientist and one of the writers and was there in the beginning. And so I guess since no one else is here from the beginning, I'll take credit for thinking of it.
It's a good idea.
Thank you. Yes, that was all my idea. I thought of cameras and everything. The old gang is back,
right.
Or portions of the old gang is back, and we call ourselves Cinematic Titanic now, and we're touring around the country doing live versions of Movie Mocking.
So yes, we are. I've seen them, and they're great.
Thank you for saying that.
It's true.
Thank you for using that word, that you've seen them, and they are great. Because I
it's
haven't.
It's true. Nobody else was there, so I can say excellent. It was great.
Yeah.
No.
That one
were
guy
there.
That was in the audience said it was great.
I shouldn't have come to your rehearsal. That was rude of me. Stalkerish.
We don't rehearse.
But it is great. And you guys sell DVDs, too, right, of the live performances?
Yes, we do. You can buy them on Amazon. Perhaps you've heard of it.
I have. Indeed, it's where my book is.
Ah, my book is not on Amazon.
Oh, you have a book?
Yes, I wrote a children's book called Silly Rhymes for Belligerent Children.
And it is also, I don't want to say great again, it's wonderful. It's wonderful. And the art by Len Peralta. Right?
Yes. You might know Len because he's drawn everyone that ever existed. Sharon Bertschik, who is in the audience, has... it's your... What do they call that?
Geek a Week cards, right?
Yes, the Geek a Week... Geek a Week card. And Len's done a lot of artwork for... He's working with Josh right now, Josh Weinstein.
Right.
Doing some art for a project he's working on. He's worked for Mary Jo on some illustrations.
Yeah, he's a busy guy.
He's working with Bill Orbit on a comic book. And
yeah, we were just...
Why are we talking about Len so much? Let's not talk about
him. I miss Len because we just went to DragonCon together and we were roommates. And we agreed to be one another's spouses. And we would go back to the hotel room and talk about our feelings after various events happened. And Len and I would talk about our feelings. And then we had that awkward moment where we kind of looked at each other and like, is this what you would be doing if your wife had come along on the trip? I was like, yeah. How about you? Like, yeah. So it was sweet. So Len's very close to my heart. I love Len.
You actually shared a room?
Yeah, there were two beds. I mean, it wasn't weird or anything.
No, it was still weird. It was in the weird zone.
It was a good time. He draws in his sleep. It's amazing. Insane to see. All right, well, Trace, let's get into your obsession. And you are obsessed with what?
Frankenstein, and more specifically, Frankenstein's monster.
That was going to be my first question. Are you one of the people who really likes to correct people that it's Frankenstein's monster?
No, then my obsession would be being a dick.
Frankenstein's dick.
Yes. When did that get attached? Was that early in the operation?
I think so. And like, I can't imagine that. Yeah, Frankenstein sending Igor. No, a bigger one.
Yeah.
Go back to the graveyard.
Well, even that they considered it. You know, they must have. You know, well,
that one leans to the left. Go get another one.
Yeah. Stop looking at the Jewish cemetery. You know, I had never thought of that until you brought it up.
I know.
That was even a possibility.
Sometimes dicks just come up. I don't know.
So, when did Frankenstein's monster come into your life?
You are all filthy people. Well, I was a child. Oh, there's no way to make no, this any really better.
No.
You know, it aired on television. Frankenstein, the original 1931 Frankenstein, was on late night on the weekends. There was a creature feature here in Minneapolis. I think it was Friday and Saturday. It might have been both nights, maybe just one night. And they played, you know, all these Universal old horror movies. Kind of the inspiration for Mystery Science Theater, too, was a hosted movie like we were used to when we were growing up. They were always done by, like, the weatherman at the station or whoever, you know, they could get to do that. And I just remember watching this as a kid and just being thoroughly entranced by Boris Karloff, specifically, and his portrayal of the monster. I don't get into any other Frankenstein.
Just that original.
Just Boris Karloff and Frankenstein's monster.
Do you like Bride of Frankenstein's monster?
I love Bride of Frankenstein's monster. Because, again, that's Boris Karloff and also Son of Frankenstein.
Right.
The thing I thought about that I thought was cool about Frankenstein's monster. Now I'm being a dick to myself. I can't just say Frankenstein. It's Frankenstein.
It's Frankenstein. We all know what we're talking about.
Yes. He wore a sport coat. If you think about it, he's like this hipster made from the dead monster.
He really is like, yeah, he's got little cans of Pabst BBR on his neck. Yeah.
But, you know, no, there was Dracula, who was kind of, you know, aristocracy and dressed like, you know.
He's the 1%, yeah.
He was a count. Yeah, exactly. He's the Mitt Romney of monsters.
Yeah.
And the werewolf always just reduced to pants.
Yeah.
Which, Creature of the Black Lagoon was naked.
The mummy had the one suit. Yeah.
The mummy just, you know, rags. But Frankenstein was cool because he had, and I don't know who thought of this, who costumed the monster. You know, and I don't know if it's in the original novel.
No. I think in the novel he's described as like this twisted, bendy, like not even big and imposing necessarily, but just kind of a mess.
But he's wearing Hickey Freeman. You know.
It's exactly.
He's dapper.
Yeah. You know? No, he's but he yeah he's not wearing a sport coat.
Not in the novel. No.
No.
And also in Son of Frankenstein, he wears this kind of like Sonny Bono kind of furry thing that's he'd moved on. He was more of into his hippie phase at that point.
Is he in the ice in Son of Frankenstein? Is that one of the ones? He's always in ice.
He's in ice or fire or he's in a molten
earth
lava
or wind.
Thing,
yeah,
he's fine when he gets out.
Yeah.
But
So you like the sport coat?
I like the sport coat. I started kind of collecting Frankenstein memorabilia.
At what age? When you were a kid?
When I was a kid.
Okay.
You know, little figurines and things like that. And what happens when you have kind of an obsession with things like that, like people collect pigs or cows or penguins, people start giving you cows and penguins.
Right.
And so I started, you know, hey, it's your birthday. What do you likes Frankenstein? Let's get him some Frankenstein. So suddenly I start amassing a big collection, and what wasn't an obsession becomes an obsession by proxy.
Right. I have the same problem with not a problem. I embrace it with squirrels. I do like squirrels, but I have squirrel stuff, so people always give me more squirrel stuff, which makes me think that if I ever have a child, I should just really train him that he likes physical money. So that everybody who comes over goes, damn, that kid likes money.
Yeah.
I guess we should give him a 50, like a mug with a 50 on it.
Yeah, he's got a coin collection. Maybe he likes
maybe
money.
Maybe he likes bills, too.
But squirrels.
Squirrels.
Stuffed?
No, I know many friends who have stuffed squirrels, and they think I should have one, but I don't have a stuffed squirrel. I like the animal. I would say the squirrel is my spirit animal. I've talked about it on the podcast.
But pictures of squirrels? Or
pictures. Well, pictures? You know, people give me probably everything. We could probably go toe-to-toe of, do you have a Frankenstein thing like this? And I would have a squirrel thing like that.
Salt and pepper shakers.
Yes.
No salt and pepper shakers. Oh, wow, they all left. No salt and pepper shakers, you're not obsessed. Damn you! I don't know if someone makes them. I would love to have.
So what kind of Frankenstein stuff do you have?
I have this, someone recently gave me, it was 10 years ago, 35mm print of the trailer.
Wow.
Which is in a baggie, and I have no way of looking at it. So there's this 35mm print that sits in a drawer because it's Frankenstein. Yeah. It's a trailer from Frankenstein.
I do not have film from like 80 years ago of a squirrel. But I would like it if anybody wants.
80-year-old squirrel footage. Hey, that's what he's into. I don't know. Internet.
Yeah, I only have modern squirrel footage. There is a squirrel was in my house and it was caught in a humane cage where, you know, it was just like it stays there until the guy goes in and gets it and he takes it somewhere else and releases it. And I thought, I like squirrels so much, I should take like a video on my phone of me talking to the squirrel.
Oh, no.
So I got the phone out and it's like, hi, squirrel. Hey. And of course the squirrel flipped out. So I turned it off and I looked at it like, this is terribly creepy. It's just me tormenting a squirrel in a cage. It's sad.
Well, have you found through your studies that most obsessions are creepy to a degree?
Yeah, up to a point. It's interesting in the different ways that people handle them and express them. Which, like, what's interesting to me about your obsession is there is Frankenstein stuff. So you can go get Frankenstein stuff. But some people don't have obsessions that relate to, like, sports and like media. If you have stuff that relates to like sports and films and television, you can express your obsession by just getting stuff all the time. But if you have like a weirder obsession with just like, you know, I had an audience member who liked removing signage.
Yeah.
So like, you know, you can't get a t-shirt that says I like removing signage, you know? You just have to do that one thing.
Yeah.
I think sort of capitalism pushes us towards like that it's good to be obsessed with things because it like you like this, don't you want this version of it? Don't you want a picture of it with this? You know,
exactly. And it makes gift giving easy. Unlike like Moisture Man has, you know, it's what's he going to get for a gift? More moist things.
Purell.
Purell.
Purell. Or gloves. I think gloves would be good too. So you've got a house full of Frankenstein stuff to this day?
I still do. I've got a marionette puppet that was made by a guy out in Hollywood. There's, you know, the 12-inch figurines. There's the 6-inch figurines. There's the knockoff Frankenstein stuff that it was made, you know, to look kind of like Frankenstein, but get around copyright laws and things like that. So that just probably more than I should have.
But you haven't got rid of it, right?
Why would I? You can't. I mean, it's even when it breaks, I have an arm off one of the Frankensteins that has my keys on it because there was a hole in his arm and it fit my key and it made sense to me.
So when you go to your car, you pull Frankenstein's arm out of your pocket.
Yeah, it seemed appropriate. I don't know if it's on me somewhere here. It's probably in a bad place. But why am I digging for it? It's the
internet.
Don't
know. It is. Yeah,
it's the internet.
It's the internet. So now you're married, correct?
Yes.
And how does your wife feel about the Frankenstein obsession?
She is also a geek and a nerd, and so she loves she likes The Hobbit, and so she has her obsessions. I have mine.
Okay.
She's teaching me the names of the dwarves, so that when we go to see The Hobbit, she's going to kill me. It's on the calendar on the refrigerator.
Okay.
December 14th, I think. Something like that.
Yeah. I don't know.
Anyway, so I'm learning the names of the dwarves.
Okay. So, do you have a special like room in your house for Frankenstein stuff, or is it just everywhere?
It's spread throughout the house.
Okay.
The cat has destroyed a lot of it, so it's moved to... The cat. Damn that cat! But yeah, it's sort of everywhere.
Okay. And so for you, do you still watch the film? You still enjoy the original films?
Oh, absolutely. And I really think what it is Karloff's portrayal. Mm-hmm. He's so sympathetic as that, you know, he's an everyman.
He is. He's so got a suit coat.
Yeah, yeah. I have his arm and his willy and... Even on the internet, I am afraid to say that word. Doctor, I have a problem with my Frankenstein thing.
My Frankenstein's friend. Try that.
Yes. You got Frank. You could say Frank. How about that?
So, have you tried watching any of the non-Karloff films, or is it just his portrayal?
I have watched a lot of them because I want to see if anyone else gets it right. You know, so the but they're all just. No one has really, you know, matched the integrity and the brilliance of that performance. So it's, and now they're getting so much CGI stuff that it's, you know, the makeup was perfect. It's such an icon that it hasn't been duplicated.
No.
Although there was a stage play with who's the guy that plays Sherlock, Cumberbatch.
Oh yeah,
that they just. Broadcast
Humperdinck Cumberbatch, I think. I can't remember. I know who you're talking about. The guy who plays Sherlock right now on BBC. Yeah.
He was in the London stage play. That
Did he play Frankenstein?
Yes, he played the creature.
Wow, the creature.
Yes. See, I wasn't a dick.
No, you were. The creature, please, sir.
Yes.
So you relate to the general humanity of Frankenstein, that he is this... He's a monster, but he's just a misunderstood monster, which I think does come across really clearly in that film.
Yes, exactly. He can't help but be, a little bit clumsy.
Yeah, and I don't know for yourself. For me, I mean, you're a man of comedy, and there is that heart to what he does, but there is also humor in his performance, whether intentional or not, of... Just that very, very simple. It's almost the same reason that, like, caveman expression is funny. That attempt at language, but not having the skills to do it, and that attempt at, like, of knowing cultural norms, and just like, well, I'm gonna. It seems like you like throwing things in the pool, so I'll throw you in the pool.
Yeah,
and is that once like horrible and kind of funny?
Yes, it is. I wonder if audiences. Laughed at that moment, or were they just shocked?
I think they were shocked, right? I mean, because he seemed really scary and imposing. You hadn't seen things like that.
And he threw a child in the water. So, yes, I would imagine shocked would be the better reaction. Unless it was Honey Boo Boo.
We need a modern Frankenstein to throw the various reality stars in pools. That'd be a great way to lose on a reality show.
Yeah.
You do not have the winning design on Project Runway. Here comes Frankenstein.
Too pedestrian, crack.
He just breaks the neck. That would be wonderful. All right, so Trace, are you ready for your final questions?
Sure.
Okay. When a movie is so bad that it causes you physical pain, in which part of your body does the pain manifest?
Sphincter. Duodenal sphincter.
Such precision. If the full moon turned you into a were-something, what would it be?
Were-pants.
That would be great, because then you're the one monster who doesn't need to worry about losing his pants during the change. That's great. And finally, what is happiness?
Happiness is being obsessed with something.
Ladies and gentlemen, Trace Beaulieu!
Thank you.
So... I want to close out the podcast we had been discussing downstairs which one of you think is more obsessed. So I've got a little quiz that I put together to see which one of you is actually more obsessed. So are you guys ready for that?
I'm good. You ready?
Yeah.
All right. So, Barb, the first question is yours. Please tell us the name of the Afghan Whigs' first album in the entire track list in order.
Oh, I told you I couldn't do that.
I know. But I had already written the question.
It's Big Top Halloween, and I don't know the track listing.
Go ahead and try.
No, I literally...
What's a song on it?
I don't know the material from Big Top Halloween. Thank you for making me look like a total douche. Your turn, Trace.
Total Douche is the third track.
That's the remix.
So you get a point for that. I mean, one of the songs is called Dough Ball. That's pretty close to Total Douche.
No, I don't know the track listing.
Okay, you don't know the... Okay. So did you come in at a different point than Big Top Halloween then?
Yeah, I came in a gentleman.
Okay.
If I were going the very first song on that album, they hung a microphone out of the car window as they drove over the bridge from Kentucky into Cincinnati to record the sound of Cincinnati. It segues directly into the song Gentleman. Would you like me to continue on? I can take on Gentleman.
You've proven that I grabbed the wrong thing from Wikipedia quite successfully. Because I didn't know anything about Afghan Whigs until earlier today.
That's okay.
When I looked it up on Wikipedia. Okay, so you get a point for that obsessive knowledge. Yes, of course. Trace, please recite Frankenstein's most famous line of dialogue.
Fire good.
I would have accepted fire anything. And also guttural noises. So you did.
Oh, well.
You did very well.
I don't think fire actually was good. Now that I think.
Did he actually ever say any? I mean, fire obviously plagued him, as it does all of us.
Yes.
Which is always weird that that's his secret weakness, fire.
I think in the first movie, all he did was go.
It's true. He just looked like he was sad. That's fire sad. So, Barb. On the Wikipedia page for the Afghan Whigs, their music is described as being better than what other kind of music?
Better than what other kind of music?
Yeah. I don't know if you spent a lot of time on their Wikipedia page like I have.
I don't really know much about their Wikipedia page. I would say that it's better than any other blue-eyed soul or grunge, which they were kind of leapt into. 90% of most of the other Cincinnati music that came out, if not 95%. But, you know, James Brown recorded there, so I guess 90%. That I don't know.
I would accept any. That is... Oh, go ahead.
Any other music.
I would accept that as a correct answer because the specific quote from Wikipedia was, it is better than conventional alternative rock, which really amused me.
Can you hear that coming out of my mouth? Conventional alternative rock.
This was a totally uncredited source, so it's something that a Wikipedia person wrote, but just the idea of... It's conventional
Sarah
alternative
did that
rock.
Just to see if you'd use it.
All right, so Trace, are you ready for your next question?
Yes, yes.
What is the name of the first successful stage adaptation of Mary Shelley's Frankenstein?
The first successful.
The successful. Not all those shitty ones.
Yes, the not first
like
successful
Frankenstein
one.
88, not that kind of crap.
Wasn't it Prometheus?
Close. It was called Presumption, which, again, I looked this up
what?
On Wikipedia.
Presumption?
I was really amused by it. It was called Presumption. Not Prometheus, but just it sounded like half a Jane Austen novel.
What's it?
Presumption by Mary Shelley.
Wow, that's just bad.
I know.
That's just
how dare Frankenstein assume something. You know?
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
I'm
you know, it's Wikipedia. We could just argue it.
Or just go change
with
it.
Conviction. Yeah. Exactly.
Write my own entry. Presumption.
No, that's that Prometheus.
Yeah.
By the time.
Yeah, go change it. Go change it to Frankenstein's Monsters Willy.
Someone just put that in there.
It is probably wrong. It is
the
probably
Monsters Willy though is a better title, as you say. Yes.
Okay, so at this point, Barb is technically winning, but I'm going to give you a chance to steal it back. So both Barb and Trace can answer this final question. So we'll ask Barb first. If Frankenstein and the Afghan Whigs released an album together, what would their hit single be called?
Fire Good. Goddamn motherfucker.
Is that the entire title?
Yeah.
Fire
yeah.
Good,
and that
would goddamn
be the first line
motherfucker.
Of the song, too, and the rest of it would just be the pedal.
That would get a lot of airplay, I would imagine.
Well, you can bleep it.
Okay, so Trace, same question to you. If Frankenstein and the Afghan Whigs release an album, what would their hit single be?
Presumption.
Ladies and gentlemen, Barb Abney, Trace Bilyeu, thank you very much for coming to Obsessed with Joseph Scrimshaw. Good night.
You've been listening to Obsessed. Joseph Scrimshaw and his guest shared some stories with the rest. Rate 5 stars if you're impressed.